Thank you, David, and thanks to Cedar for affording us the opportunity to have some views on a very topical and a very important element. Firstly, I am going to defy all logic that you would typically find with consultants, so no PowerPoints. I'm just going to talk, but I'm talking about a topic, and I'm talking from a business perspective, and specifically a services industry perspective, which does not even try to pretend that we know all the complexities that sits in the policy domain. Sitting between Richard and Denise during lunchtime just emphasized again to me that I should not try to have too much views on what should happen in the policy domain. But being a businessman, I just couldn't help myself by digging into some of the operational realities that we are seeing. So I'm going to share some views on that. And I'll just start off by saying that if you look at the case that's been presented, clearly there's a significant issue for us. It is fundamental to the productivity of Australia that we get education, innovation, and the infrastructure elements, that we get it right. But not only get it right in isolation, get the configuration of the three right. And Richard already touched on the concept of education and innovation and how these two elements actually cannot be delinked. And I think we'll do ourselves an injustice by delinking it. Another point is that education and higher education specifically cannot be looked at in isolation. It's happening in an environment where there's economic turmoil. It's happening in an environment where there are government policies and philosophies which are impacted by the turmoil. There's workforce changes, there's technological changes. And all of these elements together feeds into the what is possible when you start looking at making changes here. So I will try to keep some of them in mind, but I just want to comment on higher education and where the review is going and the type of output that we would like to see from a business perspective under three categories. The first category is education, higher education and innovation. Secondly, I would want to talk just about higher education as producing the talent that's needed for productivity growth in business. More than 70% of our economic activity comes from the services industry, and it's fundamentally a talent play. And the importance of that can never be underestimated. And then lastly, as I said, I couldn't help myself by just giving some thoughts on some of the nuts and bolts that's happening in universities and how that can actually be done. And it is done under the auspices of, if we're in the higher education field, we have the choice of waiting for it to be done to us or for us to do it. And I think there's a bilateral proactivity that's required for this to work. So let me start off with the innovation system and education and where that would leave us. Firstly, the way that we would define innovation would be as fresh ideas that create value. And you have to have both of those elements. You have to have the fresh ideas, and not only at a small company level, but at a country level. And there's no better field for creating fresh ideas than the university sector, the higher education sector. But these ideas have to create value. And I fundamentally believe that the value extraction and value creation element of that is much better served by the private sector, by business in its own right, than it is by trying to commercialize and creating commercial arms within universities. And I know that it's not a popular thought, and some people may disagree with it. But if you want to fundamentally play to the strengths of a system, get the idea creation and ideation happening where the core capabilities support it, but get the extraction of value out where the core capabilities support that. Now, there is always this problem of short-term gain versus long-term gain. And true innovation is not just only about short-term gain. And I do think that is where business has the responsibility to step up to its contribution in the space of higher education and innovation and ensure that what we take out, take forward, and we actually do something useful with it, not just for short-term commercial gain, but very much so for long-term commercial gain. I think the full funding that is called for by the Cutler Review is plausible and it has to be done. But it can't just be done in isolation and we just generate ideas. We have to extract the value. From a higher education perspective, I actually do think the fundamental thing that higher education institutions can do is to expand the influence sphere rather than to trying to do it all. Expanding the influence sphere with blurring the boundaries between business and higher education industry entities, especially when it comes to the extraction of value. out of some of these things. By allowing rapid prototyping to happen and not wait for the finite, detailed, full configuration of any idea to be developed, but actually push it into the market quicker. Do it in a competitive way. There's a wonderful case study around Li and Fung that sits in China, actually in Hong Kong, and just uses a number of entities to try to prototype things for them. There are innovative ways of actually getting it out into the market. And I think technology gives us one of the best abilities to create a community where these ideas would flow from universities, between universities, but also between universities and industry, commerce, universities, industry, and the community. And the more we can expand that component of ideation, the better we would be. So fresh ideas that create value. My fundamental view there is that the higher education sector should be, for the big ticket items, the core source of the fresh ideas. And business should be the core element of extracting that value, but in conjunction and blurring of boundaries there. The second point that I just want to touch on briefly is the concept of talent development. Talent is for us in the business, and we've seen some of the numbers that that Professor Bradley had up there in terms of the increase in stock of people with higher education that's required. It is absolutely a prerequisite for every business, not just the services industry. We are a knowledge-intensive community, and any big producer of goods or a miner has got a significant knowledge-intensive element in there. And that element requires good stock, more stock. And the more we can do that, the more we can up it. So how can we do that and look at in the context of what is happening right now and do it better? It is true that there is a diversification at this stage of the mix of people that come into universities, and I think it's going to increase. It's not going to be the traditional school leavers. I think what we are seeing in volatile times, like the economic times that we have, is that people will actually go out and create a certain socioeconomic standard before they go in. Much more serious students, but much more focused on actually extracting value out of that learning experience. And I think there is ways and means that we should look at that. There is also a diversification in the method of delivery. It is not just the brick-based delivery model. More and more we see that the younger people that are prepared to learn in different ways. Social networks, Web 2.0, these things create an amazing opportunity to expand the way that knowledge is distributed and taught. And universities is still the core owner of the content. And we've seen it around the world. Content becomes king if you embrace alternative distribution mechanisms. And I think that needs to be considered. And then also a diversification in terms of the association with business from a talent development perspective. All of businesses, and I know for sure from our side, we are increasing our investment in training and education every year. And it's one of those things that in volatile times you absolutely cannot compromise on. Quality becomes even more important. So how can we do that increase of funding that business do in any case in conjunction with universities to allow ourselves, again, to capitalize on the core capabilities of both? Just lastly, issues around challenges and opportunities that we do see. And within Deloitte, we are very proud to be associated with a number of the higher education institutions through a specific initiative. As a matter of fact, I think we've been doing work for 26 out of the 42 that we could count. And there are a couple of things that came out of that that we believe should be considered at least. And this is less aimed at policy decisions, but much more aimed at the practitioners on the ground. And we do it under four headings. The way that we look at value creation is normally a revenue growth element. There is the operating margin that you get out of it, there's asset efficiency, and then there are management structures, which we call loosely expectations or capabilities. Under the revenue side, I do think that universities will have to start look for new sources of revenue. And revenue that's not just necessarily extracted in the traditional way, but extracted out of the network. What a better experience would a young person have to go through university, go into work, and become an active alumni that still link that back to the university and actually generate that, those linkages that I spoke earlier about between business and the university. But more important than that, I believe it's going to be the choices that universities will have to make. If you look at the private sector and you look at what constitutes growth, there are basically three core elements that constitute growth. Firstly, it's the choice of your portfolio. Secondly, it's non-organic growth in support of that portfolio. And thirdly, it's gain share. And research that we've done and that we've seen actually indicates that more than 80% of growth of sustaining companies comes from portfolio choices and non-organic growth, how they collate and bring things together. And if I take that corollary and I apply it to universities, I think universities will have to make choices on what they are really good and where the momentum flows. And those choices will give growth, both in terms of quality, growth in capability, but also growth in revenue. And then many issues that I spoke about in terms of the collaboration becomes more and more important. If we look at the operating margin, the efficiency play within universities come some distance in actually providing more professional supportive areas to support the academic mission that they are executing. However, if you do an analysis and you look at best practice, and best practice is common knowledge, it's no longer a differentiator. Inefficient and outmoded practices still means that a significant percentage of the dollar generated, and it's becoming scarcer and scarcer, is spent on administrative services. I do believe that universities should start looking at differentiation between their academic excellence and the efficient management of their services. And when it comes to the efficient management of support services, develop a performance culture which absolutely drives the best out of that. And look at things like outsourced support. Look at things like shared services. And bring these things together in a way that creates a much more vibrant, forward-looking output rather than spending all the money on the support services. Which then brings you to asset management. Physical assets and intellectual assets, the two key assets that universities would have. Again, through PPPs, and I actually think a fast-track process of public-private partnerships, the physical asset element can be addressed in a very different way than the traditional we have to own, we have to build, we have to maintain. But similarly, if you look at intellectual assets, the whole concept of extracting more data out of the intellectual assets through data analytical tools and the likes becomes actually quite an interesting way of optimizing those assets. And then lastly, just in terms of performance and outcomes, workforce planning for universities is going to be a big deal going forward. The majority of the teaching staff would be baby boomers. A number of them would retire soon. How do you actually maintain the quality at that level and think about workforce planning differently? Capability management to drive change. I think that change is going to be the one thing that the higher education sector will start facing more and more and more. And the notion often is that let's just see this change through and then it's back to business as usual. The fact is it should be an institutional capability to do change on change on change. And I think that's one of the capabilities that should reflect in the management processes. So to conclude, fundamentally, we believe that ultimately 42 broadly undifferentiated institutions will not sustain the growth that they have to sustain. Very fundamental choices will have to be made. Government should provide the incentives, policy incentives should be there to facilitate that and to support it and make it work. But within the universities actually will have to take that on, embrace it and have the willingness to survive and do that in a differentiated way rather than an indifferentiated way. And within that, I think business and universities, higher education together with the government and the community at large can make this a better place and create a differential advantage for Australia. Thank you.